And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. And tonight we present the second part of our North Korea special. This week we come to you from the capital city, Pyongyang. And we're going to start things off with something that I taped off the radio over there. This can only be described as a mega mix of all sorts of North Korean songs. And that will be followed by some commentary about what it was like over there.
Thank you. here we are. We're standing on the 37th floor, staring out the window in Pyongyang, North Korea. It's incredible. We've been here a week now, and this place is just so full of surprises. You think you've seen it all, and then all of a sudden something else happens that just blows you away. And right now we're looking, we're on an island. We're looking over the water to the city. And I don't know, how would you describe it? It's just so bizarre, isn't it?
Well, the whole place is bizarre just because everything's so big, but they also managed to make everything look big. It's not that everything's big, therefore it all looks fairly normal. Like, each individual thing sticks out quite a lot. And so even though we've been here so long, we're still basically glued to the window whenever we're here.
Yeah.
You know, we're always just looking out the window saying, this is awesome.
And this isn't your typical city in that there's a magnificent skyline to look at. We're looking at a fairly dark city right now, where occasionally you see flashes of light, which I imagine come from trams, where the electric sparks or something like that. And it's just very different, very quiet. You can hear dogs barking, and they're across the water in the city. You don't really hear much traffic noise. Occasionally you hear a car honking, but that's about it. And the car honking is far away, too. We were standing in the street just a little while ago, and it was so strange and surreal. We were standing in this very dark street, but it was crowded with people walking by, and you'd see trams go by, and that was the only light on the street. It was bustling, but dark.
I think, it's notable that it wasn't dark because they don't have any street lamps. They just choose not to put them on. And, well, although that's fair enough, it just gives a very different air to the city. And I wouldn't say that it's necessarily quiet. We can see lots of different cars moving. Mm-hmm. It's just more sedate, you know. There's not too much shouting. It's a bit of a car honk. And occasionally you hear music kind of drifting over the air.
Let's just listen to the sound of Pyongyang for a minute or so. I was hoping the dog would start barking again, but apparently it's not to be right now. But, it's unlike any place I've ever been. And the people, too, have surprised me so tremendously. So very friendly, so very open, so very generous. And I think the first whiff we got of that was when we drove down to Kaesong and just started waving at people, and they started waving back and smiling, and it was... I don't know why you would expect that not to be the case, but I guess the way that we've been programmed to feel about North Korea is that it's a hostile place, and in fact what we found is that it's very much the opposite of that. We look very strange, we look very bizarre to these people as Westerners, but we've been welcomed with open arms everywhere we've gone. And not just by the official people, but by the people on the street, too. And, yes, you do see the people in the street. You do get to talk to them. You do get to walk up to them. I was led to believe that everything would be so completely controlled and you wouldn't be able to participate in any way with any kind of a conversation with a real person. And that just is not the case. We were able to walk up to people. And we walked through a park, and we were invited to a picnic from these people who just happened to be singing songs and celebrating Kim Il-sung's birthday on April 15th. And it was just an incredible experience, just sharing that moment with those people, those total strangers we just happened upon by walking down a particular path. And there are so many other instances where such a thing happened with us, where we were just... walking down the street and happen to talk to somebody. But the thing is, what we've been led to believe, I don't know if you've had the same experience as I have, but certain things have been told to us, such as if you go into the metro station, the crowds there are all prearranged, and they just walk up and down, and they're the same people, and it's all there just, it's a stage show just for you. And we walked into the metro station, and do you think that was the case at all?
There were massive queues. I mean, there were so many people. Mm-hmm. I think as our as one of the people said, you know, this tour, you know, isn't necessarily cheap, but there's no way we can pay for all these people to come to the metro station and, you know, and waltz around for us. You know, it's just...
Well, plus we saw them coming from way down the street, exactly. You know, with their children and everything, and they're coming into the metro.
But I think the way that it's perceived, or rather, you know, reported, is that there are so few people here and they're bussed in when necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just not the way it is.
And that's
there
the
are too
thing.
Many people for that to happen, and they need to use the subways, so they do.
That's the other thing. Now, when we came in here, we were pretty much under the impression that the city was practically a ghost town. And when we drove in from the airport, it was very dark still, and that is one thing that is true. It is very dark. But the streets were crowded with people. There were people everywhere. Now, I was sort of under the impression that we weren't even going to be able to drive down real streets and see what people really looked like in those real streets. But that's the first thing we did. It was come down the main streets and see people going about their business in the dark that night. But then the next day, in the daytime, we saw people being, I guess, leading the lives that you lead in the city.
It seems very bizarre to us, I think, that when we came, it was night, you know, it wasn't late, but it was dark. Yeah, there were lots of people on the pavement, lots of people walking, lots of people on bikes. Now, that seems bizarre just because we're not used to seeing, in the US, you're not used to seeing pavements. And in general, you're not used to seeing lots of people on the pavement. But
right.
If you think
pavement,
about
you mean
it,
the actual street?
I mean the sidewalk.
Right.
Just to clarify. But actually, since there basically aren't many cars being used, it's pretty much the same, because if you imagine they're all in cars, then we wouldn't bat an eyelid. It would just be totally normal. So I think there's mm-hmm. a normal amount of people doing a normal amount of things. It's just that here they do walk. They, you know, they walk and they take the bicycle, and you know, sometimes they'll take the tram. But they just get on with their lives, and there are a normal amount of people for a city this size.
Sure, seems that way. And something else that struck me: every TV program documentary I've seen about North Korea has the traffic lady. The traffic lady is somebody who stands at an intersection and waves cars by in lieu of a traffic light, which I guess saves power as well, which seems to be the theme of this city and I guess the country as well. But in almost every instance where I saw this lady, she was directing empty streets, and that was the irony. That was what was pounded into our heads, was that, wow, they have this traffic lady who is directing traffic that doesn't exist. And we saw many traffic ladies, and we saw lots of traffic in the city. True, the highways don't have very much traffic at all between cities. But in the city itself, there was a fair amount of cars, and she was needed. And she did a pretty good job, too. In fact, one of us was warned by her when we were taking pictures. Somebody stepped into the street, and she whistled and pointed. So it was kind of cool to see her be activated and turned against us.
And they can be fine. You know, they can fine people for doing all sorts of stuff.
They're policemen,
and they have to. You know, I mean, there are loads of people all over the place.
Yeah.
And you know, you forever hear whistles being blown here. It's just like, you know, back in the day in England, you know, the policeman chasing a robber down the street, just blowing his whistle and doing nothing else.
Right. Right.
And it, you know, it's a little bit like that here. If you hear a whistle, then somebody's done something they shouldn't have done.
Yeah, and that's happening
and
all the time.
It might be a minor infraction,
mm-hmm.
but you know, at least they're telling them off. But, I mean, on the power-saving issue, you know, we can basically see quite a lot of apartments with their lights on at the moment. It's kind of mid-evening. And we can see the major monuments. Mm-hmm. But in about an hour's time, the lights will be off. They'll be off on the monuments. They'll be off on the hotel.
Right.
And increasingly, obviously, they'll be off in the apartments. So it really, you know, give it 3 hours past midnight, perhaps it'll be... very, very dark.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the countryside, it's even more than that. Lots of times the power is out for most of the day. And it's sad that people have to do without so much, but it speaks to how hard people work here to just get through the day, just to make a living, just to do whatever they do to survive. It's very interesting, very different from what we're used to. But the similarities are what get to me. The people who laugh, who play with their children, who just do the things that we expect to see. You know, it's not that alien an environment as we were led to believe. And I guess if I had to say what the strangest thing about the place was, it was that there's so much of a military buildup. I mean, everybody seems to be in a uniform of some sort, whether it's traffic guard or soldier or policeman or so many. And it just seems like so many people are part of that. And it kind of trickles down to the children as well, because well, the whole mass games thing, which is impossible to describe, but the mass games thing where so many children, I think, what, 20,000 of them, are in stands at once, collectively making images in the stands, pictures and words and all kinds of, you name it, animation, just by flipping cards, they're able to do this. And I don't think any place in the world can do something like that. But the children are trained to do this, and they're into it. They love doing it. I mean, apparently that's one of the things that they strive for. But it's also kind of endemic of a military society where people do things on command at the same time. And I guess that's one of the good applications of military societies, is doing something artistic like that, doing something that shows how, when a lot of people get together, they can make something incredible happen. And the mass games are certainly about as incredible a human achievement as I have ever seen. And I don't think that's by any stretch an exaggeration, do you?
Well, no. I mean, the sheer simplicity of what they're doing, yet, you know, on the scale, is very, very impressive. And, you know, I think regimented is a good word to use to say, you know, how it is that they're trained. It's a very regimented fashion in which, you know, you open your book to the red page at the right time, and then you create this nice picture and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, you're right, I mean, it goes through the whole of society. But, you know, very interestingly here, it's not that they're all bred to be soldiers. You know, it's a matter of culture and art is very important, and they're forever singing and creating music. They have they're very protective of their arts. You know, the paintings, sculpture, anything like that. And I think they're a lot more proud of that than they are of their army in some ways, and it's much more important.
There's a bird flying.
You don't see many birds here. And I was a bit surprised at that.
It's at night. I just saw a bird fly by our window. That's kind of strange.
It's about the size of a seagull, not the same, but...
No.
Yeah, you see a lot of little finches here, but a few magpies, but...
Maybe the lights of this
hotel. You don't really see many animals at all.
No. No, we've seen magpies, we've seen, we actually saw a few dogs up north, but not very many dogs down here. You're right, not very many animals at all. But again, very comfortable here for the last week. I'll miss the place, I really will. And I'd like to see it again. I mean, it was kind of, definitely controlled as far as what we did when we did it. But within that, there is lots of flexibility. There are lots of spontaneous moments. There are lots of random encounters with people, which I think that forms the basis of your memories of a place like this that you visit. And I think if more people simply try and understand that, try and appreciate what the place has to offer, then maybe it'll open up more. Maybe there'll be more flexibility. And... I don't know, there'll be more communication with the rest of the world, which is something that definitely is different for me, not being able to just hop on the net or something, or be able to... we can make phone calls. It's just extremely expensive. There's something like €6 a minute to call various countries. And there is television in the hotel that we're at. In fact, we can see BBC World here, which you can't see in hotels in other parts of the world, namely America. But that's not the case, obviously, for the average North Korean who can't make overseas phone calls, who can't watch anything but the one TV channel that's on during the week. And I think there are three on during the weekend. And that TV channel has pretty much nonstop patriotic songs and videos, films, and news. And it's fascinating to watch. Probably drive me crazy, though, if I had to watch it all the time. And, of course, there's radio, too. I counted... the radio station here, I counted, I think, 17 different frequencies in this city alone broadcasting the same program. So, Yeah, you know, media diversity is one thing that this place definitely does not have. But who's to say that can't change with time, with a bit more interaction with the rest of the world? And that's what I think is the most important thing. How do you get a place like this to interact with the rest of the world? You certainly don't get it by isolating them even further. Look at the things that are going on in China. You know, it's not a perfect place over there by any stretch of the imagination, but they are opening up so much and interacting so much and building up their culture, their society, their infrastructure. And I think it's going to lead to good things. So who's to say that can't happen here in a different way?
Well, it might happen, but I think it'll take a long time. I mean, from the feeling you get here, you know, they are very happy in the way they are, and it would be in some ways damaging to start interacting with the rest of the world. And
I don't think interacting with the rest of the world would be what's damaging. I think if they gave up their belief structure and started putting neon everywhere, yeah, that would definitely destroy the culture.
But I mean, once you start interacting with the rest of the world, you're threatening what is a very strong structure and belief system here. But you know, it is threatened, and there's no doubt one of the reasons why things are so controlled. And interestingly, I was talking to a TV crew today, and they were saying that they're very tightly controlled. You know, and they said, you know, when they were working in Russia in the Soviet times, it wasn't as tightly controlled. They would try and film something which they knew that they weren't supposed to be filming to show on TV, but you know, people were saying, "Oh, I don't like that," and "Oh, I wish that wasn't happening." But they wouldn't pull them away and say, "No, look, you're not filming this." But here, that is what they'll do, mm-hmm. and they'll say, "No, no photos, no camera," and so they're saying, "You know, this is a lot tighter than it ever was back in Russia."
Well, it's a smaller country too, and it's a lot easier.
Oh yeah, it's very much more easy. But I mean, you know, even just going around Moscow, then you weren't allowed to go outside of Moscow if you were visiting, but you could basically roam freely within, and but you know, here that's not an option.
Right.
You have to, if you want an option, you have to negotiate it with your guides who are here, and you know, they're very good, and we've already said that they're quite open. Some of them are very open, some of them less so, but mm-hmm. they are, you know, real people who laugh and smile. And
I think it's all a trust issue, because obviously journalists come in and film things. It's been done hundreds of times before, where they come in and just focus on negativity and poverty and things that obviously the powers that be don't want to spread around too much, and they miss the bigger picture of what it actually is like to live here, what the people are actually like, and so many of the smaller things that make the bigger picture. So I can see in the case of journalists things being a lot more closed, but in the case of individual people such as ourselves, it seemed that we were controlled as to where we went when. It was you know, like any tour group, I guess. I've never really been on a tour before. It's hell on earth. having to always wake up at 7 in the morning to be someplace and see these monuments and stuff. I mean, it's interesting. I like learning about the culture and all that, but it's always nice to have free time, and that's something it's so hard to do here. But yet we still were able to interact, to take pictures, to wander around. I even got lost at one point. they have this structure known as the arch. Is it the Victory Arch? What's the official name of it?
The Arc of Triumph.
Is that the official name, the Arc of Triumph?
That's what they've been saying. They've not been using the French, but
no, not Arc de Triomphe. But it's bigger than the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. It's different too, and no one's mentioned this, but there's actually a road that goes through it on both sides.
Yeah.
So you can drive through it sort of a T intersection there. But we went there, and apparently I didn't hear that we were supposed to meet on the other side of the street. I was sort of wandering around in circles looking at the structure, and then I just went into this tunnel that I saw everybody going into, everybody being the Korean people. And I went into this thing, and it was incredible. It was this dark tunnel that apparently led to the metro. Yeah, the imaginary metro that is made up for Westerners. And all these North Koreans were chattering, you know, busily walking down this tunnel, which was completely dark. There was no lights. There were no lights at all in this place. And everybody just was going at normal speed, as if there were lights. And I was just amazed by this whole thing, just walking around. Obviously, I couldn't be seen very well there, so they didn't know I was an outsider, I suppose. But I had been led to believe that if you even try and mix with a North Korean crowd, you'll be immediately reported, and there'll be all kinds of commotion and penalties handed out and all sorts of things like that. And there and other occasions, nobody really seemed to pay it any mind. In fact, people were friendly. They would say hello, they'd wave, various things like that. Any event, in this particular case, I just wandered around a bit and came out onto the street again, and I didn't see anybody from the tour. And that's when I first started to get a little bit panicky, saying, okay, here I am. I'm actually in Pyongyang, North Korea, and I'm lost. And I'm not near any Westerner. I'm in the middle of, this is exactly what's not supposed to happen, but I'm in the middle of a North Korean crowd. And they're looking at me kind of oddly, like I have two heads or something like that. But I'm kind of wondering, what do I do now? I mean, it's easy enough to find your way back to the hotel because it's a big building. But still, it's what's the tour group going to do? And that's when I saw the bus all the way on the other side of the street. And I think you were waving out the window saying, head over here. And of course, it's not the easiest thing to do because the streets here are extremely wide and there is traffic and it's very dangerous to cross. Because the cars, like in China, seem to have right of way. They do whatever they please. And in fact, what cars do is simply barrel into crowds and honk the horn, and people are supposed to scatter, and they always do. So I went back into the tunnel and eventually came out on the other side where the bus was. And I'm sorry, too, because apparently what happened as a result of the bus pulling over, waiting for me, was it a trolley bus or a tram? It was a trolley bus. With those electric connectors that go to the overhead wires, passed by. And because the bus was sort of parked where those electrical wires were, the electric bus lost its side view mirror by smacking into... Our bus lost it. Was it our bus that lost it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was the other bus that lost it.
When the trolley bus comes detached from the rails, you have to pull the arms from the top of the trolley bus and position them so that they're onto the electric tracks again.
Right.
And so the way they do it in this country is they have some pieces of rope which just are constantly from the arms down to the trolley bus. So you just pull the rope and you position it. And in other countries they use a pole which they get out on special occasions like that. But yeah, there's this rope had then basically kind of lassoed one of our side mirrors, not the only one, fortunately.
The rope lassoed the side mirror?
So it just came
past. I didn't know this.
Past. No, it just came past and the rope caught the side mirror and just snapped it straight off.
Oh, so it was our bus. So I damaged our bus indirectly.
Yes, that's right.
Have we been traveling around without a side
mirror?
But
on the other no, well, there were two, but then on a lot of coaches there were secondary ones at the top to give a second angle.
I think I put everybody in danger by not having a second.
Theoretically, we are. In more danger now.
I thought that the way the story originally presented itself to me, I thought that I had inadvertently damaged the bus system here in Pyongyang by somehow yanking off one of their mirrors.
Well, that was a problem. Nobody was expecting the coach to have two. And so when we found one on the floor, we immediately went to the trolley bus and said, oh, you've lost yours. And then, hang on, they've got one too. Everybody's got enough. Where's this one come from?
Yes, a Pyongyang moment. There have been many of them, haven't there?
Yes, indeed.
You, in fact, coined the phrase, what's the exact phrase?
I didn't expect this.
Yes. Can you think of a few instances where that phrase has been uttered?
Well, we were going into... There's a monument here that you can go up. It's a tower, which I can't remember the height of it, which has a big flame on top, which is the Juche Tower.
Juche Tower.
To basically commemorate the ideology of Juche, and it must be about 100 meters or more up, and there's a lift and all that kind of stuff. So you go in, but the first thing you see is kind of it just looks like there's part of a house in there, and it's actually a massive underground, big corridors. There's a bar. There's many. Many rooms, and you think, well, I'm going to climb into a lift and go up a tower, but no, you have to walk away from it to get into this complex underneath, and there's that the mausoleum is far bigger than you thought it would be, with music playing, and
that's where the leader Kim Il Sung is entombed, I guess is proper phrase, and you get to see him. That was an incredible experience.
So it's just when you turn around corners and all of a sudden it's there. We went to the health centre.
Yeah.
And that was kind of interesting. It's one of those things where they want you to see it, therefore they take you there. We've been to a lot of places where we want to go. Obviously, we wouldn't really have initially ticked the health centre to go to, but, you know, it's fairly good. There's a barber shop there, which is pretty funny.
Well, that's the thing. We walk into this building. First of all, we didn't know exactly where we were going this time, but we pull up in front of a building, and we're told this is the health centre of some sort, and it's, again, one of these huge structures with marble floors, and we...
Well, everything's marble inside. Yeah. The walls, everything.
It's unbelievable. So we walk into this place, and we have to put on sandals for some reason. And, of course, all the sandals are way too small because nobody has big feet like we do around here. And we walk down this hallway, and all of a sudden we're in this barber shop. And there must be like 15 people getting shaves and haircuts all lined up down a row and with more people waiting outside to come in. And all these foreigners suddenly get ushered into this barber shop.
And told to take pictures.
Told to take pictures of these poor people having their heads shaved or beard shaved or whatever.
Their noses plucked.
Yeah. And none of them are complaining. They're just sort of looking at us with curious expressions. And we're clicking away. And then after that, we walk down this massive hallway.
If we were free to roam, we could have gone there. It's fairly cheap. It would have been easy because although we don't speak Korean, you choose your haircut by looking at a big picture on the wall and telling them the number.
Yeah, none of the hairstyles looked like anything we had.
No, well, that's true.
We then walked all the way down this massive hallway, and so many massive hallways in this place where you start walking and 10 minutes later you arrive at some place. And we did that. They split up the males and females in our group. That's when I started to suspect something was up. And then all of a sudden we just burst into a locker room where these people are dressing and undressing in all states of undress. And I don't think anybody took pictures in there. I hope not. But we were apparently on our way to a swimming pool. I mean, in fact, we definitely were on our way to a swimming pool. It's just we had no idea what we were going to see next. We just kept going through these doorways and being shown these parts of life here in Pyongyang. It was incredible. So, yeah, that's something I certainly didn't expect. And looking out into the pool, there was this one guy with this massive amount of he had like a fire cannon shooting down on him while he was sitting quite content in a corner. I don't know what kind of effect that gives you, but apparently he wanted all the skin taken off of his body or something. So you had people doing that. You had little children going down the slide, and they were waving at us. It was really very pleasant. And then when we got out of that building, and keep in mind this is only one building. Every building has a story here. We got out of that building. And we looked across the street. This was kind of probably the most ominous thing, I think, I saw. All these men kind of lined up across the street, spaced apart at intervals of, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 meters apart. And they all just were staring straight ahead like they were guarding something. But it just was the street. You know, this was very unusual. And I couldn't figure out why across the street from the health center there had to be all these people standing guard to prevent somebody from crossing over or going down a particular block. And these people were spaced as far as you could see on that particular block. It was very interesting.
That's one thing I noticed about here. You can't, even if you do speak Korean, you can't actually tell what most of the buildings are because where you would normally expect to see the name of the building, you know, like shop, bank, museum, whatever, they normally have this slogan. You can tell it's a slogan because 60% of the time it'll end in an exclamation mark. Mm-hmm. And that basically means something like, you know, our great leader, Kim Il-sung, will be with us forever. Something along those lines. And so actually most buildings are basically unnamed by just walking down the street and saying, well, what's that? So, well, don't know.
Yeah, lots of times
even our guides, we've got one who's not as experienced and is learning. You know, he doesn't know because he doesn't need to know what that building is, and therefore he hasn't asked anyone, and therefore he doesn't know.
"자주권은 나라와 민족의 생명입니다. 자주권을 떠나 나라의 존엄을 생각할 수 없으며 민족의 장래 운명에 대해 말할 수 없습니다. 위대한 수령 김일성 동지는 선군으로 내 나라를 찾아주시고 민족의 존엄과 자주권을 지켜주고 빛내어 주신 탁월한 군사 전략가이시며 백전백승의 강철의 영자이시었습니다. 그럼 먼저 무적 필승의 강군을 키우시오. 이런 제목으로 말씀드리겠습니다.
Going down the streets in the coach is obviously very interesting. You can see all sorts of stuff, and you know, again, it doesn't seem that we're going down chosen streets to see chosen things. You know, we're just going on the way to get to the other monument is this way, therefore you see what's there. Mm-hmm. And it's great just waving to people. We've more or less turned it into a game in the nicest way possible.
Yes.
Just, you know, just to see if we can, you know, wave at people. And essentially, that's the best way and the easiest way for us to, you know, for a moment connect. And you can tell the people you have because they genuinely do smile, and some people kind of go, wow, there you go. And there are a couple of people who have hit very Western hairstyles here. There's one guy with, you know, bleached hair, and that's obviously very, very different from anything they've seen. And I was on the coach earlier, and they were, some of them were literally laughing and pointing and stuff. And, you know, you can, but even when, you know, he's not there, if you can just momentarily make eye contact and then mm-hmm. they start waving, you realise that you've, for the most part, you've brightened their day. And no,
I think they brighten your day too.
Well, exactly. And you know, I just think that essentially, whatever you say, even if you can't speak, you can always kind of connect in some way, whether you're by making someone laugh or even in that way, just waving. And you know, you can more or less tell when someone's genuinely happy. Why are they going to fake a smile walking down the street? Mm. They're not. And so, you know, I just think it shows that essentially they are, you know, open people who are quite happy. But you know, you've got to respect the way they're thinking.
That's the whole secret right there. And that's why I think we've accomplished more here than many governments have in trying to understand and deal with this culture. Because, yeah, all you have to do is simply respect how people live, what they believe in, and you'll get a friendly wave and a smile and all the generosity you can possibly imagine. It's so simple just to do that. The rest follows. But you gotta at least give that much. And I find so many people are unwilling to do that. That's what's sad. That's why the connections are never made. And also, that's why I think we find it surprising when we do make connections. We shouldn't be that surprised because people are like this all over the world. People
yeah.
are friendly.
Yeah.
And you wave at people, they tend to wave back. But yeah, you're right. It did turn into a game. It was a lot of fun. We started with the kids down in Kaesong, and then it just sort of spread from there. We got adults. People in the fields, not as much. People in the fields tended to be working much harder.
Yeah.
And looked, they didn't look all that thrilled about what they were doing. But occasionally you get a soldier to do something. I think one soldier even saluted when
yeah.
we waved, which
yeah.
is kind of cool.
Had a salute.
And it's great when a soldier just breaks out in like this smile, like, you know, all of a sudden you stop being a soldier and you start being a human again. That's kind of a cool thing to see right there. But I think the best one was somebody on our bus actually got one of the traffic ladies to wave.
Yeah.
Now, she didn't wave in a way that would make a car veer into a wall or something like that, but she just sort of like underhandedly just waved her hand while she was holding up the stick or whatever you call it to tell cars where to go. And that's another thing. I really have to study that system to figure it out because it just looks like she's pivoting and pointing and doing all sorts of acrobatics. And it doesn't seem to make any sense, but it obviously does because cars obey her and don't collide into each other. And that's another thing. I haven't seen any cars colliding into each other like I would in other cities.
Except what you caused.
Well, yeah, you know, and that figures that the only time would be something that I did. But for the most part, it seems to work. People know how to get around, how to do things. You know, just walking through the dark streets is enough right there. Everybody just sort of has a destination and goes there. And there's the same kind of excited chattering you see in any kind of city environment. I think the kids, though, are one of the big highlights of this place because they're just, they're so cute, for one thing. They're always waving and laughing and jumping around, just like kids do, but there's so many of them, for one thing. They really are.
And because the Korean people like to be so neat and tidy and smartly dressed, they do so also for their children. And, you know, I have to say, it makes them look incredibly cute. And they're so well-behaved.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's just, they're all photogenic. There's not one that isn't.
Yeah, it sure seems that way. And another thing, I've noticed this in other countries, like Japan. I've noticed this in Norway and Sweden. I didn't see a single crying kid. All the kids were laughing and running around. Now, you know, people give us all kinds of information about this place, and they'll tell you how people are, you know, brainwashed and various other things, which I believe are myths. I believe that now more than anything. And, you know, you can't get the kids to all play along, especially at that age. Believe me, you cannot get kids to cooperate in any scheme. So for them all to be laughing and being happy and jumping around and not crying, something must be right about that part of their lives anyway. So something to consider, something to think about. Closing thoughts about this place. You know, we're leaving tomorrow, and I'm kind of sad that I'll be. It's kind of weird though to think that I'm going to China, and it's going to be. You know, I'll have more freedom there to walk around and do things. I never thought I'd think of China in that kind of a way, but there is something about this place which really will stick with me, and I was hoping to get that kind of a feeling when I decided to come here. Well, by the way, what made you decide to come here?
I think mostly that I didn't know I could. And I think once people realize they can come here and, you know, they're willing to take on board a few, you know, set facts that you don't bother questioning, mm-hmm. you know, that's fine. And it works really well. And, you know, it would be an amazing experience, I thought, to come here and see these crazy massive sculptures, monuments, buildings. Nowhere else can you kind of get that. Everything else is tempered by, you know, cost, and just I really like the architecture built in stone. Mm. It's very simple architecture, but very, very powerful. And, you know, it's really what I like a lot. And I'll miss that very much. A lot of people don't like this kind of. I suppose they associate with like communist blocked apartments, not necessarily varied colours.
But if you do like that kind of stuff, this is the place to see it.
No, I don't love it, but. It just looks really nice. This whole city looks great, in my opinion. And, yeah, I will be disappointed to go. You know, I'm very happy where I live, but this is a very nice place to come. It's a shame it's not easier.
It really would be nice if it were, and I'm hoping that it does get to be easier and more people will see this place and approach it with an open mind, because that's really the first step towards any lasting relationship. And I think that's what the goal should be is a lasting relationship, something where we can help these people, they can help us, and before you know it, there'll be flights from New York to Pyongyang. Who knows? Well, that's it from Pyongyang, North Korea for this week, and maybe we'll be back in the future. Who knows? What a place. Let's listen to the sounds of the city.
평양 방송입니다. 7시를 알려드리겠습니다.
조선인민군 최고사령관 명령 제010호 주체 956 2007년 4월 14일 평양. 조선인민군 지휘송원들의 군사 칭호를 올려줄 때에 대하여 오늘 전체 인민군 장병들과 인민들은 사회주의 조선의 시조이시며 주체의 영원한 태양이신 위대한 수령 김일성 동지에 대한 사무치는 그리움과 다음없는 경모의 정을 안고 태양절을 뜻깊게 맞이하고 있다. 위대한 수령 김일성 동지께서는 영생불멸의 주체의 사상, 선군사상을 창시하시어 인민대중의 자주성을 실현하기 위한 투쟁의 앞길을 환히 밝혀주시었으며 두 차례의 혁명전쟁과 북강조국 건설 위협을 승리로 영도하시어 우리 조국과 민족의 운명을 구원해 주시고 우리나라를 자주자립 자유로 빛나는 사회주의 강국으로 전전시키시었다. 위대한 수령 김일성 동지께서 장군하시고 백승의 한 길로 이끌어오신 우리 혁명 무력은 당의 순문혁명 영도 밑에 수령결사옹의 정신이 차넘치는 무적필승의 최종의 혁명강구로 강화발전되어 조국보위와 강성대국 건설에서 혁명의 주력군으로서의 위용을 높이 떨치고 있다. 나는 당과 수령의 품 속에서 자라난 인민군 지휘성원들이 앞으로도 당의 용대를 충직하게 받들고 우리의 사상과 우리의 제도, 우리의 이업을 굳건히 지키며 선군혁명의 승리를 위한 투쟁에서 자기의 영예로운 본분을 다하리라는 것을 굳게 믿으면서 뜻깊은 태양들에 점하여 인민군 지휘송원들의 군사 칭호를 다음과 같이 올릴 것을 명령한다. 중장 유영철, 박광철, 김양수, 조경철, 장인국, 최대일, 리종무, 최귀혼, 허창률.